Do I give off like I drive a Mustang convertible right now?
Because now Sabrina has a Mustang.
For one day.
It is so goofy trying to picture that.
This is like, I feel like the chapter of my book where it's going to be like the one day of driving a convertible Mustang and I'm just going to become a different human.
Yeah, you need to take a trip up the PCH when we're done recording. Just, you know,
put like the top down, take my top off.
Yeah, yeah. Let the wind in your hair. Go to Malibu Farms, get a $20 smoothie.
Ooh, honestly, that things. Does sound kind of nice. Why do you agree?
Mustang people do. I feel like that's not stereotypical of Mustang owners at all, but
that's
in
like
California,
convertible.
Yeah, that's a convertible thing.
What's up, everyone? Hello.
This is Two Girls, One Ghost.
Two girls, one ghost. And we are your ghostesses. That is Corinne.
Hello.
And I am Sabrina. And we join together today to talk about something we love so deeply, and that is the paranormal.
Ghosts.
But first, and if you don't like this part, hey, we're not tying you down. You may skip ahead 15 minutes.
Yeah, use your fingers, technology.
Yeah, first we're going to just talk about life.
Well, I was late to recording because my arachnophobia has returned and oh my God, is that another fucking one? Hold on. Literally, I think Brian killed its wife and now it's coming back.
For revenge?
Or is that the same one?
Is it back from the dead?
Is it just squished partially?
Let me look. Oh my God, should we do a seance to talk to the dead spider?
Oh, I can't tell if it... Here's what I think happened.
What happened?
I think I just need to wait and watch as it comes out. Brian and I were like, where the fuck are these spiders coming from? Because we had another huge one in our kitchen the other day. And they're like, I know spider people are going to be upset with me right now. They're the jumping spiders. So they're the ones people have as pets. You know, like they're very curious.
But they're
people
huge.
Have them as pets? Yes, people do have them as pets. And when they're outside, I don't.
Show yourself.
People on TikTok. They have like little enclosures for them and stuff.
Oh,
ew, I'm gagging looking at it. Anyway, they're like very intelligent. They're kind. They don't do anything to you. They're just curious. They are like little pets. And so when I see them outside, I just like, you know, like I don't freak out if they get close to me.
I'm sorry. Did you just say a spider is kind and intelligent?
It is. They're curious about what you're doing.
How do you quantify kindness in spiders? That they don't crawl up your nose and like try to kill you?
I guess. And I think they do act a little bit like of all the spiders that exist, they act a little more dog-like because they are just curious about what you're doing. So they'll like come and like kind of watch you
with their
do
thousand
whatever.
Eyeballs.
Yeah, but they won't bite you. But they are jumping spiders, so they can like leap. So they're very, very scary. And so I was a little bit late to recording.
Jump into a pit of death, please.
Yeah. There was a huge jumping spider, huge tan jumping spider that was in this room. And I was like, how the fuck did this get up here in the guest room? So Brian came up with paper towels, smushed it, we thought. And now I see it. And I think it's the same one. And I don't think he actually killed it. I think what happened was it is coming.
Does it have the same birthmark? Can you tell?
No, because only half of its body is
I'm
visible
just kidding.
Right now. I literally think that they're coming in through the windows. We're currently getting our windows replaced because these windows are so old and like we just live in an infestation because every single bug can get in.
And they're really intelligent. And so they know that your windows have been taken out and that it's their opportunity to come in.
Yeah, yeah. So now there's like another six windows that have to be replaced and they're coming in through those ones.
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Okay, so I love to... Before I go on a trip, I make sure to like change my sheets because I really like to come home to like fresh, clean sheets.
Yeah, I usually do the same thing.
But I have this massive phobia of if I've not slept in my bed for, let's say I go on like a 2-week trip, even a week, even a couple days. When I come back from a trip, I'm really concerned that because I haven't slept in my bed and nothing's been moved, that spiders have taken up residence. And I'm terrified of that.
I have the same exact fear. And I always wash my sheets before, but I will literally lift up all the sheets and like pull the bed stuff back and examine.
I'm glad I'm not alone.
Same thing happened. And I literally, after I thought Brian killed this one and it's still alive, so don't be mad at us, spider people. I was like, I have to immediately wash our bed sheets and I'm not even in that room. Maybe they were playing there today. I don't know. But anyway.
If I learned that I've killed a lot of spiders in my life, or I am responsible for the death of a lot of spiders because anytime they've been in my space, I've either killed them myself or had someone kill them. And
I want to put my hair up like I'm having a visceral reaction to all of this. I'm twisting my hair and putting it in front of me so I just can like see.
Getting small.
Yeah. And my hood is no longer safe.
If I were to learn that my involvement in the paranormal and my interest in the paranormal would mean that I had to have a seance, and in a seance, all of the spiders I ever killed would come to me, I would never kill a spider again, because
that's
the amount of spiders that would probably come haunt me at that seance would be
truly a nightmare.
Enough to send me into a heart attack and death.
Yeah, I feel that. I feel that. Even the baby's reacting to this. I'm shivering. Baby's punching. It's like everything in my body is so grossed out by that idea.
For some reason, I thought you said even David. And I was like, did you just out your baby's name? But then I was like, you wouldn't name your baby David.
David. I'm naming my baby David, guys. Baby David. That's what we'll call him now. Oh my God, that's hilarious. Sorry to all the Davids.
My dad did that. I was talking to my dad before him and Nona had Luca, and I had asked if they had a name for him yet, and they're like, we're not telling anyone. And then my dad goes, so yeah, this summer, like, we'll be doing this, and Luca will be over there in this room. And I was like, you just said your baby's name.
You just said it. I've almost said mine and Brian's baby's name a few times because we've named him.
You found a name? How'd you find a name?
It actually was one of the first ones we agreed to, because there's three names that Brian and I both were agreed to, but two of them are girls' names and there's only one boy name. So we were like, we both like it enough that we're just going to use this name, but we're not telling anyone until the child comes.
That's fair.
There is this one fear in me. Not that it would change anything, because like we've already decided what we're naming our child and that's what our child's going to be named regardless of what happens with other people. But Brian's cousin is also pregnant right now and I just love her so much. Like I feel like she is my cousin now, but we're just so excited that our kids are going to grow up together. Like they're going to be 3 months apart. And I feel like she's someone who will announce the name of her child before the child comes. And part of me is like, oh my God, what if they pick the same name? But then it's like, it doesn't matter because people don't, claim a name. Like, if we look back at like our generation, everybody in my classroom was named Emily or Lauren. So, clearly that didn't matter. Megan.
You can't claim a name.
No. Anywho.
Dead spiders and baby David.
The two of us, all of you, the spiders, Sven, gathered and sweet together. Baby David, have gathered here today. It's so big. Should I send you a picture of what I'm seeing?
No. That it truly... That is the absolute worst thing in the world is when someone sends me a photo of a spider. Like, here's the thing. I don't get mad. I'm not that I've never, like, in my life, anger and mad being mad are emotions that I don't access often. Mm-hmm. The closest I've ever been to anger is when someone sends me a photo of a spider. Unsolicited. Yeah,
I feel that. I really, really do.
I'd rather an unsolicited dick pic any day.
Well, one is scary and one is just gross. So,
which one's
scary
which?
And gross?
Yeah,
maybe they're both.
Scary maybe they're both
and gross.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh man,
listen. I don't look at a penis and say, "Wow, that's attractive."
It is such an interesting thing that it's like, as people who are heterosexual, you would think, I don't know, like the male form would be more attractive in its like parts. But I feel like it's a common kind of universal experience for women. Like that is not the part that we find attractive.
Right. But also like, to be fair, women are not sending photos of their labia and being like, I'm trying to turn you on.
That's just true. What you gonna do with all this meat?
No. Here's a close up of my clitoris. What are you, hope you're turned on.
That's true. It is interesting. I just feel like, you know, the universe, like as we start to evolve, it could make things prettier. I don't know what it would do, but
yeah, not to say that penises and labias aren't pretty, it's just that they're not
everybody's body is gorgeous. Okay,
exactly. The fact that you are in a meat suit is beautiful and the most amazing, incredible, magical thing in the world, but like getting turned on by something, I'm not gonna
there's
say
a lot of other
thing.
Parts that come first, which is maybe a good thing, because if you could just send a picture of like, you know, your face or other things. If your phone were to be hacked, those things are not embarrassing to have on the internet.
Exactly.
But we don't need to tell you what to do with your nudes and how you interact with it. We've all been young.
Did I ever tell you I got caught for sending nudes?
Wait, yes. Maybe? When you were younger?
In middle school.
Yes.
Yeah, it was bad. My mom caught me.
This was like, wasn't it like something was synced and you didn't know that it was synced up?
No, I think she like looked at my phone. I think she went on my phone.
Mm.
I asked her about it recently and I was like, how did you find it?
How did you discover it?
But I never, you know what's the craziest part is I was in eighth grade, it was like eighth grade. And I never even kissed this guy. He came over once and we like were clearly going to kiss, but we were both too nervous and never did.
Wow. It's one of those things. It's like middle school. You're just, it's a confusing time with your body and what you should or want to do with it.
Yeah.
But when you leave that body, you become a ghost. And that is why we've gathered.
That was an amazing transition.
Today. I'm going to keep touching my hair and staring off into the corner to see if the spider moves this whole time.
Keeping an eye on it.
But we are going to talk about a place that's kind of near to me and not far from where I was actually born. And it was inspired basically by our Patreon episode that we did last month where we covered the Mount Washington Hotel and some of the hauntings on Mount Washington in New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. And there's just so, so many hauntings here and in this just like general vicinity of like a few hundred miles, not even, it's like tens of miles of this like one area of mountain range and Appalachian Trail and whatnot. And there's just so many stories. And I was like, oh, I want to do another episode on it. And honestly, it's going to be multiple episodes probably from this area.
This is the reason we will never end this podcast, because we can talk about hauntings forever.
I chose a 5-mile square radius and I have 100 hauntings.
Yeah. I'm a cat person and I'm proud of it. Happy cat, happy life. That's what they say, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So I make sure I make Leia happy with one of our favorite sponsors, Smalls. This podcast is sponsored by Smalls. And if you've listened to the show, you know that my cat Leia cannot live without Smalls. Smalls cat food is protein-packed recipes made with preservative-free ingredients you'd find in your fridge, and it's delivered right to your door. That's why veterinarians.org rates Smalls 10 out of 10 for ingredient quality.
Smalls was started back in 2017 by a couple of guys home cooking cat food in small batches for their friends. And a few short years later, they've served millions of meals to cats across the U.S. You know when Leia's expecting hers because she screams on the podcast.
She yells. And even my vet, so Leia's on a diet and my vet helped me curate her dietary plan. And Smalls is a major part of it. And after making the switch to Smalls, 90% of cat owners reported overall health improvements, which is a big deal. The team at Smalls is so confident your cat will love their product that you can try it risk-free. That means they'll refund you if your cat won't eat it.
Now is the time to make the switch to Smalls. Head to smalls.com/TGOG and use promo code TGOG at checkout for 50% off your first order plus free shipping. That's the best offer you'll find, but you have to use our code TGOG for 50% off your first order. One last time, that's promo code TGOG for 50% off your first order plus free shipping. This is Mount Wiley and the Wiley family tragedy.
Is this going to be sad?
It's a little sad.
Okay. Tragedies usually are sad.
Yeah. That was a big context clue for sure.
I'm a detective.
Good job, Sabrina. A+, 10 gold stars. All right. 200 years ago in 1825, Samuel Wiley Jr. of Bartlett, New Hampshire, moved his family, his wife, his 5 children, so family of 7, to Crawford Notch. Once called the White Mountain Notch, it was renamed to honor the Crawford family, who were well-known trailblazers in the area. And some of the Crawfords lived at the same time as these Wileys, so they actually did interact with each other. And then the mountain would soon be named Mount Wiley to honor the Wiley family and what happened to them, what I'm soon to tell you about. Oh my God, the anxiety of having a spider near me.
I can feel it for you.
Yeah. At the highest point, about 1,900 feet above sea level, the notch provides a route to pass through the mountain. So it's basically like kind of a valley-ish area, but it's like there's a bunch of hills and mountains around it. And then the road, the notch like goes through, but it's still really high in elevation. The whole town is high in elevation, all the farm fields and whatever, but it's not like they're living literally up on a cliff in the mountain. They are kind of more, a little bit more in like a wee valley, if that makes sense. Valley.
Okay.
Winters here can be really harsh and challenging, as we covered in our Patreon episode last month. Mm-hmm. But summer in the White Mountains is so beautiful and it attracts so many tourists. And that was really, I think, what attracted the Wileys here too. Like, it was a very gorgeous area.
Yeah.
During autumn, when the mountains were set ablaze with the crimson reds, the deep maroons, the bright yellow foliage, this is when the family of seven moved into an existing home. It was called the Old Notch House, and it's kind of small and unassuming, small-ish. I guess small for maybe a family of seven. But it was a house that had already been constructed back in 1793, so by the time they moved into it, it had been around for like 30-some years.
This is giving me like Conjuring House vibes a little bit. I know Conjuring House was built in the 1600s, but it's like similar, like a big family moving to an old, like a, you know, older house. I mean, I know this is also the 1800s, so it's old-timey.
Yeah, but I mean, like white settlers didn't even make it into the area until the late 1700s. You know, like it was pretty much in line with the independence of America. So largely this area was pretty unpopulated by larger groups of people at this time. Mm. So it is kind of like, it does feel a lot older.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know.
I'm already anticipating something spooky happening.
It does, but maybe not what you're expecting.
Oh, okay.
So over the next year, the Wiley family, they spend the entire year basically renovating their house. They're adding additions on. They're building this other structure right outside of their house that is a tavern. And essentially what they wanted to do was to create this inn and tavern for people who are traveling through the White Mountains to kind of stop and stay and have some reprieve and just kind of like, you know, settle and relax and enjoy the scenery. So both Samuel and his wife, they came from respectable families, and they themselves raised their children to be very respectful, very well behaved. And the neighbors immediately took note. The spider is gone. It's not on the wall. I just hope it went back into the windowsill and is leaving. But this is mine, I'm bare. Okay. So the neighbors, they immediately noticed how well behaved your family is.
Just, so podcast, but spider.
It's awful that I also just hung up curtains. So it's like, are they behind the curtains? I don't dare go take the curtain back. Now I feel like I'm itching everywhere. Oh my God, this is the worst. Okay. So the family, they basically acclimated and assimilated to the community. Very quickly, they were taken in and they made a lot of friends with their neighbors and with the community that did exist here pretty immediately. Mm-hmm. And so the neighbors were they were pro this business that they were starting. They were like, yes, an inn and a tavern sound great. Like, that sounds like an awesome idea. So Samuel Wiley, he then hires two men to work at the inn alongside him and his family as well. The inn was really beautiful because the house was situated between two mountains and they had this really, really large, beautiful meadow right in front of the house. So like their entire yard was huge, like this little tiny valley between these two mountains. And in the spring, there would be a breathtaking amount of bluebells that would pop up. And it was also right near the Saco River.
Why is this so giving me a Court of Thorns and Roses? Like, I feel
it kind of
like
is. Yeah. This is the spring court and yeah, it was gorgeous. This is the spring court countryside, really.
Beautiful. Picturing it perfectly.
Yes. It's so worthy of a painting. At the time, most visitors who stayed here were farmers from New Hampshire or from Vermont. And they would be passing through on their way to Portland. And this area was not really sought after in terms of like adventure or sightseeing like it is today.
Were people really looking for adventure and sightseeing back in the day, though? I feel like it was like survival.
It kind of was.
And procreation.
Yeah. And also, I feel like at this time, unless you were in like a major city, everything kind of feels like sightseeing. There wasn't that much that was built up yet.
That's true. Yeah.
So at this time, people who did stop here and travel through, for the most part, they were just passing through. And this mountain range was kind of viewed as a roadblock, an annoying thing that was just like in their path to get from point A to point B.
Yeah.
But the Wileys, they were really hoping that the beauty of the area and of their land would attract more people who would want to come and just simply experience it. So they were kind of like fantasizing about writers and artists coming up and spending a weekend or a week here and painting or being inspired for their next novel or whatever. So they viewed the area more like we view the area today.
Okay, I appreciate that.
So almost a year after the Wiley family had moved in, it's now June of 1826, and the Wiley family was startled to witness a huge landslide on the mountainside. A giant mass of land fell from above, crashing into the valley floor, and it stopped like just feet short of hitting their tavern. So their tavern was almost wiped out. Their home was almost wiped out by this landslide. So scary. So obviously, yes, this terrified them. And Spring, the spider is back. Oh my God. I just literally saw it pop out.
Wait, go kill it.
It's not fully coming out. It's like half out.
Spray it with something.
I don't know how. I'm waiting for it to fully come out and like move a little bit away from the sill so I can tell Brian and have him rush up and do what he needs to do. What I can't bring myself to do.
You're going to hire a hitman. I love it.
Spider, if you're curious, go be curious outside.
Run away, little spider.
Oh my God. I just watched it turn its body and start to partially move a little bit back more into the sill. Do you think if I go kick the wall, it will like permanently leave?
Do you want to try? I don't think
it
will.
Or will it just jump out and trap me in the corner? I'll wait.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, I have the chills for you. And now I'm like nervous that there's going to be a spider.
It's like the size of a quarter. It's like this big. They're giant. Okay. So at this point,
do you want to take a picture so we could put it in the video for people who are curious?
I will when it sticks more of its body out, because when it just slid up, it, like, now there's only two legs out.
Okay. As we talked about how much we hate unsolicited spider pics, we're going to put one into the YouTube video. Warning. But we're warning you.
Yeah. Here it is for when I have it. So spring had come and gone at this point, and very little rain had fallen in the area. So it left the earth really, really dry. The roots of the different plants and the trees, you know, like they couldn't really penetrate down as far as they could normally if they were not going through a drought and kind of like hold the earth together. And so this, of course, made perfect conditions for this landslide to happen that happened in June. But luckily, the Wiley family survived it. But they were very nervous. So in this area, you have to be really scrappy to survive, especially on the mountainside, especially
right.
in this sort of environment and in the conditions, which there aren't that many people around to help you out. So you really have to know
you're
how to tackle
on your own.
Nature. Yes. So Mr. Wiley is like, hey, landslides, I think they're posing a threat to my family and to our home. And he decided to create a secondary shelter for himself and his family should another tragedy strike.
A bunker?
Basically, he made a bunker. Yeah. He made it out of stone, and it was along a mountain, like right at the edge of the mountain. So it was kind of like a, almost like a cave sort of situation. And it wasn't that far from the home. So like, should a landslide hit their home, if they could run fast enough, they should be able to seek shelter at this sort of like cave bunker situation.
Is it a part of another hill? So it's not the like landslide hill.
I think it was part of the landslide hill, but I think it was just like on the other side, like far enough away that like the idea is the whole mountain, the whole hill is not going to be landsliding at the same time.
Okay. Okay. Fair.
I don't really know if it would have done anything at all.
There was some strategy thought, and I feel like he knew what he was doing. Or
Yeah. It was peace of mind.
He thought about it.
Like, I don't think he and his wife had talked about it too, and they were both like, the chances of there being a landslide again is pretty low, but just for the peace of mind, like, we can do this, we can build it, although we think we're good.
You said this with such like confidence that it's almost as if you were there for the conversation and transported it back to 1800s.
Well, there's a lot of journaling and articles and stuff about them and sort of their conversations. And
dear diary.
Yeah, there was travelers going through and neighbors.
They talked about it.
Family in the area. Yeah, they talked about it. And so there are a lot of reports as to like why they did certain things, what they did, because there were a lot of conversations had with people who could report on it.
You know, we're in our 30s now, we're getting older, and I'm really into my skincare, and I'm really excited that OneSkin sponsored our podcast because they have a secret proprietary OS01 peptide, which is the first ingredient proven to switch off aging cells that causes lines, wrinkles, and thinning skin.
And with Mother's Day coming up, we wanted to take a quick moment to appreciate not only the moms out there, but anyone who's taken on the role of being a caregiver, because you do everything for everyone else, and now it's time to do something for you, starting with your skin. And today's sponsor, OneSkin, has a simple, scientifically validated routine to keep your skin looking and feeling good. And here's the best part. It also targets the root cause of aging. I actually showed my mom the entire kit and she was like, oh, wait, I want this. And so now it is with her.
From one mom to another. And they treat the symptoms rather than the root causes. And most skincare available on the market is designed to provide a temporary reduction in visible signs of aging, addressing just the surface symptoms of an underlying decline in skin health. Whereas OneSkin found that the OS-01 peptide reverses skin's biological age by reducing the number of sentient cells by up to 50%.
OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. By focusing on the cellular aspects of aging, OneSkin keeps your skin looking and acting younger for longer. Get started today with 15% off using code TGOG at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with code TGOG. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them, and please support our show and tell them that we sent ya. So the family, they continue to live through the summer. Life as usual. They're establishing their roots in the new community. They're welcoming more travelers into the tavern. And on July 17th, there was an editor from the Boston Courier who visited the area, and he stayed at the Wiley Tavern, this brand new tavern, and he journaled about his visit. And I think it was a personal journal entry. Oh my God, the spider's coming out more. Let me take a picture. I feel like it doesn't look as big as I feel like it is.
It's kind of like taking a picture of the moon. It's never as big or pretty as it looks to the eye.
So I kind of assume that this isn't his personal journal because I don't know why he would be spilling everybody's tea and like describing his impressions of people. Like, It wouldn't make sense for the Boston Courier, right? I don't know.
Sure.
But he said, quote, spent about 2 hours at Mr. Wiley's where we dined in the company of two or three friends and received shelter from a heavy thunder shower. We have seldom seen a more interesting family. There were several children. All appeared remarkably intelligent, well-behaved, contented, and happy. The mother was their instructor, as mothers should always be. To our inquiry whether she was
Corinne,
not
take note.
Always the instructor. You don't need to tell me twice. To our inquiry whether she was not terrified when the slip came down, she replied yes, and that she had caught two of her children in her arms to escape down the valley, but soon perceived the direction that it took and that it would not touch their house. She added that she did not feel like there was any more danger of their being buried alive by these slides than there were of any stranger who passed through the notch suffering the same fate, and expressed a perfect reliance of the protection of Providence and the acquiescence in whether they might be ordained to bear. Virtuous and interesting woman.
I mean, quite complimentary.
Very complimentary. So I guess maybe this is something that was in an article, because it does kind of seem almost like after the tragedy happened, it was like, oh, well, here's what I remember about my stay and about these people.
What I love, though, is like this reminds me of like like usually I feel like you think of like newspaper articles, especially back in the day, being very, you know, about something happening in the times, something. Mm-hmm. Whereas this feels like the OG travel blog.
Yeah.
Stay at the Wiley Tavern. The family is quite incredible, intellectual.
Here's a 2-day itinerary to Mount Wiley.
Yeah.
Okay, so basically they didn't really think that the landslide was going to happen again, or that they weren't any more likely to die from a landslide than anyone else on the mountain. So while that June landslide had startled them, they began to experience some rain. So yes, there was still a bit of a drought, but there were some thunderstorms that rolled in and the hardened crust was, you know, fighting back at the rain. But like still there was a little bit that was happening, some storms that would trickle in. And so everyone thought like, okay, the worst has passed. Summer's really hot and really dry still and we're totally in a drought. But there appears to be like a little bit and a little bit more happening. And so maybe we're good in terms of these sort of natural disasters. So the community, they prayed for safety, for the rain to come more consistently, to bring life to their slopes once more, and to permanently end this drought. Eventually, Mother Earth listened.
Oh, no.
August 28th, 1826. Night had fallen over the mountains. And the sky that was usually lit with densely packed stars was now covered in clouds. The air smelled moist and an extra buzz of electricity hovered in the air because a storm was rolling in. And I'm not sure if anyone here, I know we have listeners in like Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, and I'm sure plenty of people who live in mountain towns and communities. If you have never experienced a thunderstorm in the mountains, it is unlike anything else. I don't know if it's like the way that the weather just kind of operates and like clusters together over a mountain, or if it's something to do with, I'm so distracted because our windows are getting pounded in, and every single time like that wall gets pounded, the spider is moving. Oh, he's crawling back.
He's dancing. The vibrations.
Back into the cell.
Good vibrations.
Or if it's like the way that the sound travels through the mountains, but when there are thunderstorms, yeah, it literally, like, I understand why there are so many cultures that would write about like the gods fighting and the earth, like the world seeming to end, that like it was going to crack open.
And so many of them are based in mountains. Like, I feel like superstition mountains too.
Oh my God, now it's really big. Can I send you this so that you can see what I'm experiencing?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Here's the one thing. At least it's not so small that you could lose sight of it, or it's not so tan that it blends in with the wall. Like,
yeah,
you see that thing.
Yeah, you do. Started to move down the wall. I just texted Brian. I said, spider's back. So we'll see if he comes and helps me. Although last time he did it, he went, whoo, as he was trying to do it. And I think that hesitation made it survive.
It's so interesting because I feel like you're usually the insect killer in that relationship, or the disposer.
There's a certain level of large spider that I can't handle, and this is where it begins. Oh, it's making its way
down.
You've
reached your limit.
Oh, now it's gone. Now it's back. Jesus Christ. That's too big of a crack if it's coming and going too easily. So the Wiley family, they had gone to bed around 11 p.m. that night, but soon they were awoken by the pelting sound of rain on their roof. Initially grateful for the rain, Samuel and his wife soon changed their tune and started whispering worriedly to each other. And they were like, oh my gosh, there's a lot of rain. What if a landslide happens again? Are we safe here? Should we grab the children and go somewhere else? And the storm would only grow in strength throughout the night, becoming one of the most violent and destructive rainstorms ever seen in the White Mountains.
Jeez.
The nearby Saco River rose 24 feet overnight, flooded fields, destroyed entire homes and farms. It drowned countless livestock and moved with such force down the mountains that it cut new gorges into the sides of the mountains.
That's wild. Oh my goodness.
I know. The water was so high and so forceful that as it swept through the roads and like these areas, it would literally rip huge boulders from the sides of the mountains and left these gapes like 20 feet deep from where rocks were that it just like snatched 20 feet out of earth. So there's some real strength to it. I mean, flash floods are always so scary.
When I hear of storms like this, I think about, especially back in the day, how many people just disappeared and were never found again.
Yeah, truly. I mean, even today that happens.
I know, but at least like today you're aware that someone went missing and you like try to find them in after storms. But back in the day, like if you're traveling, there's no form of communication. Like people could just disappear.
Yeah, it was very easy, especially because the population here was so small too.
Yeah.
But at least with such a small community, I think they like all had, they knew the numbers of like who their neighbors were and who they should be looking out for. Sure. So there was some sort of record of like who was affected, whose farm got washed away, who was missing. So the entire community, they held their breath. They were begging and pleading for their God to provide them with safety to stop this storm, for the storm to relent. And they witnessed helplessly as neighbors' houses were destroyed, as people cried and screamed across the valley. And 2 days later, the rain finally stopped.
2 days of this.
2 days. Wading through waters and the land now littered with debris, people began to check on one another and to evaluate the damage to their land and to the nearby area. Mm-hmm. Communication with the Wileys had been impossible because they were a little bit further up the hill and the storm obviously prevented anyone from getting up to them. And they were the ones that were like more set apart from the community than the majority of people. Mm. And so the next day, a guide named Ethan A. Crawford. So remember, I was talking about Crawford Notch, Crawford Pass, like it was all named after this one family and that many of them had like lived at the same time as the Wileys. So he was an explorer. He knew the area very, very well. And so he went up by himself to go check on the Wileys. And it was so difficult to get to where the Wileys lived that there was points where he would have to actually get off of his horse and swim his horse across the fields because there was so much water that they couldn't just walk through a puddle.
Is the tragedy coming?
It's coming. Crawford saw the tavern intact, and he reported that there was about 39 feet of debris to get through. So I don't know what that means, if it's like 39 feet high with just like logs and stuff stacked.
Or was it like trudging through like, you know?
I would almost assume there'd be more than that based on where they were in their huge meadow. I'm not sure. But the house was perfectly intact. The tavern appeared to be okay. And the floodwaters miraculously just like missed this part of the house completely, yet destroyed all the surrounding fields. And he was literally like, everyone was talking about, like, it felt like there was some sort of force at play, because for the house and the tavern to be shielded like it was truly like a bubble. Like everything around it within a couple feet was destroyed. Yeah. But it was like there was some sort of protective force field right here over the house.
It's kind of like in movies and action movies specifically when there's an explosion and for some, like somehow the hero of the movie isn't touched by any debris. And I'm like, okay, that's so unrealistic. But I feel like that exists over this house clearly. If twice now, this is the second time.
Twice. Yeah. And so in actuality, the house was perfectly built below this ledge that had these really, really large boulders. And I guess the force of the water and like the various landslides, they just hadn't given up right here by these boulders. And so the boulders were actually protecting, like, I think the landslide, it was just a miracle that it didn't hit them.
Sure.
The water that was coming down from all the rain from the mountainside and creating these flash floods, it hit these two boulders and split. And so it like created this fork that kind of funneled around the house because the boulders were perfectly above the house, which if the boulders had like loosened and gone down, it would have just like crushed through the house.
That's wild.
Yeah, it still feels like a miracle.
That still feels like a miracle. Yeah.
Yeah, 100%.
Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement, with over 1 million people, including Corinne and I, seeing thicker, stronger, faster growing hair with less shedding.
My hair was thinning pretty bad around my face a couple years ago, and now I have baby hairs. Well, now they're longer than baby hairs. They're back, baby. But it was so noticeable that our friend Marissa goes, "Oh, wow, look, your hair is coming back.
You're sprouting hair."
I was like, "Oh, God, it was that bad before." Everyone's root cause for hair thinning is different. So they understand that a one-size-fits-all approach to hair growth, it just doesn't cut it. So they have multiple formulas that are tailored to give your hair what it needs to grow throughout the different stages, such as postpartum, menopause, as well as different lifestyles, such as plant-based diets.
And you're not alone. Hair thinning happens to approximately 1 in 2 women. And Nutrafol is physician-formulated with drug-free ingredients. Nutrafol supplements support healthy hair growth from within by targeting root causes of thinning, including stress, hormones, environment, nutrition, lifestyle, metabolism, as things evolve throughout a woman's life. 86% of women reported improved hair growth after taking Nutrafol Women's Hair Growth Supplement for 6 months. And you can take their hair wellness quiz on Nutrafol.com for a personalized hair health plan based on your specific root causes.
Purchase online, no prescription required, and you can see results in 3 to 6 months. Take the first step to visibly thicker, healthier hair. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter promo code TGOG. Find out why over 4,500 healthcare professionals and hairstylists recommend Nutrafol for healthier hair. Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol.com, promo code TGOG. That's Nutrafol.com, promo code TGOG. So Crawford, he cautiously traversed through the debris-filled yard, and he made it to the threshold of the house, and he walked inside. But there was no sign of the Wiley family. He called out to them. No response. Their clothing was still tossed on the floor, like, you know, the night before, like they had taken their clothes off to get into bed. Their beds were unmade. There was a Bible open on one of the tables. And panic started to rise in Crawford. He was like, where did they go? Did they seek shelter elsewhere? Did they venture out in the storm to find refuge? Are they at a neighbor's house? And he even thought maybe that they could have gone to or attempted to go to his father's house, because his father had this public house that was 6 miles down the mountain. And so he was like, maybe they're there, you know, very like wishful, hopeful thinking.
And I don't have wishful thinking.
Yeah.
Not in this moment.
Well, especially because you know the title of this topic. the house and just a few feet from it were the only spots that were safe. So if they did venture out, unless they had made it pretty far, it was not looking good.
Right.
Every square inch of their land was demolished. The outbuildings were crushed, the stables decimated, the horses killed. Yet somehow their oxen were alive.
It's so sad because I imagine being there in the tavern, experiencing this storm, seeing everything else around you getting destroyed, you would absolutely feel like your tavern, this tavern was going to get destroyed. So I understand 100%. Why they would leave.
Yeah, you're like staring into death.
Right. But it's sad to know after the fact mm-hmm. that they should have stayed put.
I know that's the devastating part, that like you can see all the destruction and that the only protected pristine area is where they had been.
Yeah.
But also, so Crawford's looking at this and he's witnessing all like the dead animals and everything. But the oxen that they had were still alive. So he's like, okay, there's some hope for people, for animals, if like some of them can stay alive. Perhaps there were some areas that were missed in the storm. And so obviously some people knew about their shelter/bunker situation. And so the very next day, a few hundred people joined together to assemble a search team for the Wiley family. It was a lot of friends and
like the entire family community.
And neighborhood. Yes, everybody came together. And the group moved through the minefield of fallen trees, the boulders, the pools of deep water and debris from the homes and farms that didn't make it. And amongst the group were two scent hounds who both picked up on a scent that led the search party to a specific spot that was not far from the house. But the dogs were not smelling the Wiley family. They were smelling a swarm of flies. The search party did not have to go far. For about 825 feet from the house, in the meadow, surrounded by debris, Mr. and Mrs. Wiley, two of their children, and both of the men that they had hired for their staff had been crushed by the landslide caused by the rain. Their bodies were naked, bruised, and disfigured, suggesting that they ran out really hurriedly in the middle of the storm from their beds.
Oh, no.
And one of the men who had worked for them, David Allen, this is so sad, his hand was still clenching around a small tree, trying to stay above the debris in the water, trying to stay alive. But none of them survived. They were all dead.
Wait, so it's not all five kids, though, right? Where are the other three kids?
Good question. Nobody knows.
Oh, no. But we they're missing. Presume.
Yeah. So it wasn't really clear whether the family had been racing for the cave or if they had been attempting to climb up the mountain to avoid the landslide and the water coming down, trying to get like on higher ground. Some theorized that they were attempting to make it to the shelter when the flood water grabbed them and swept them away hundreds of feet from their house. And then the other three Wiley children, they were never found. So it was Samuel Wiley Jr., his wife Polly Wiley, both of them about 30 years old, their children Eliza Ann, 13, Jeremiah, 12, Martha, 10, Elbridge Jerry, 8, Sally, 5, and their two employees, David Allen, 40, and David Nicholson, 20, who were all declared dead. There was one survivor, the family dog. So the dog had actually left that night with them out of the house, and not sure if the dog stuck with them the whole time and just happened to survive or panicked and ran away and ended up surviving. But the dog returned home the next day and was really bruised and scared and actually joined the other dogs and the search party to search for his family.
That's so sad. And the fact that he returned home and he was like, where's my family?
He was such a brave dog. I don't know what happened to him after that, but I'm pretty sure. I think he might have gone with Samuel Wiley's dad because his dad was kind of taking care of the estate after that.
Yeah. Oh, that's so sad.
Yeah. So the bodies, the people that were discovered, they were buried near their house and then they were moved to the Wiley Cemetery, which is now still in existence. It's maintained by locals and historians. It's not easy to find. I don't think it's marked anywhere because it's not really, it's not meant to be like a site where people go. It's like a small family graveyard.
Why don't we have our own graveyards nowadays? Like, why don't we get buried in our backyards?
I don't know. I wish we would. I think it's because we don't like pass down houses as much anymore. Like people move.
Can we bring that back?
They downsize, they retire. We should.
I'm going to bring back like old Victorian cemeteries in the backyard.
Yeah. I love the thought that there's like this ultra modern beach house in like Manhattan Beach, California. And then in the back is just this like wrought iron, creaky grate, some
gothic
spooky headstones.
Cemetery. Yeah. Forget a pool in the backyard. Go for a gothic Victorian cemetery.
I mean, I think that's pretty sick, obviously.
Yes.
I don't think that surprises anybody here. It's like one of those things where I feel like every time you and I bring up anything spooky to each other, the other person like mostly fully supports it. And it's because we're obviously going to the audience that is going to think it's cool.
That's true. We're speaking to the people.
Yeah.
To our people.
So horrible that this family lost their lives the way that they did, especially because their house had been saved, basically. Like it wasn't victim to the flood. So if they'd stayed put, but there was no way of knowing.
And also, I probably would have done the same thing.
Oh, 100%. You're panicked. You have to make moves now. Like, you wait too long and it's too late.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Samuel Wiley's father, he auctioned off the contents of the home. And the mountain behind the Wiley family home was named Mount Wiley.
Oh.
And when you hike Mount Wiley, you can actually see the boulders, supposedly the two boulders that split the floodwater in two, saving the house. And there's also a boulder marking the site of the Wiley house. And there's a plaque on it that says, like, this is the site of the Wiley house. So when you go up to the trailhead.
So the tavern doesn't exist anymore. It's gone.
I don't think so. There are some structures there, but I don't know if it was, I think part of it's the original house. I don't think the tavern's there anymore. I'm not actually sure.
Gotcha.
But I think that they might have moved the house.
Okay.
To another, I'm not really sure, but it's still right there. Like, you can see a lot of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Now a part of the Crawford Notch State Park, there are thousands of miles of hiking trails, camping spots, waterfalls, fishing holes, just other attractions that bring people in all year round. And some of the trails are on Mount Wiley, which are now said to be haunted. Some have speculated that the three Wiley children who were never recovered wander lost in the woods forever, driven mad by what happened to their family and now haunting hikers who pass by their old home. But I'm like, why? I don't want to believe that.
I feel like this is another example of like hauntings that have been perpetuated in like a fear-driven sense. Like, they must be lost. We've never found them. So their spirits must be confused and haunting people. But like,
totally.
Why can't they just be lurking the woods because they love it and it was their home and they're not sad and they're not scared and they're not confused? Yeah.
And it was beautiful and there's babbling brooks and the smell of fresh air.
Just like nature.
It's just nature's pretty neat. So why would you leave?
Yeah.
But I do have some accounts that were written on various hiking trail websites from people who experienced the paranormal here. One person wrote, quote, on August 6th, 2018, I hiked Tom, Feld, and Wiley with a friend. And as we started on the spur to Tom, I asked my friend three times if she heard steel drums. All three times, she said no. I was in the lead of the descent of Wiley, and after climbing down the ladders, I looked about 200 feet ahead, and there was a 10 or 11-year-old boy wearing a white shirt and blue shorts sitting on the left side of the trail, tapping a stick. My first thought was, who would let their child be out here alone? It was around 4:30 or 5 p.m. And also the area that they're in, the stairs are, I'll put a picture here. It's this really...
kind of beautiful, though.
It's very beautiful, but it's basically, the stairs is like not even, it's like a ladder, basically.
Yeah.
So
yeah, they're steep.
They're really steep. You basically have to be on all fours. Much easier to go up than go down, sort of thing. So especially on the descent, it is scary. And then you wouldn't ever want any child to just be hanging out near this by themselves.
Sure.
It was around 4:30 or 5 p.m. He looked at me with an impish look, and then right before my eyes, he disappeared. I did not tell my friend. I knew about the Wiley house as I grew up in Wolfboro. I Googled the story, and I learned that three of the children were never found, and one of them was an 11-year-old boy. Very cool experience. I will never forget him sitting there tapping that stick and looking at me, and then just vanishing. I will cherish my experience.
So it sounds like he's just chilling, which is like, you know, he's just enjoying nature.
Right.
The drums thing, though, is weird.
Yeah, like, the steel drums, that is really strange.
Ooh, you know what? Okay. He's tapping the stick as if like playing the drums. What if his spirit form is hearing, like in his head, imagining like playing the drums, and the power that he has harnessed over the years of being in these woods has created the sound? Like, we're hearing his imagination.
Yeah. Oh, that's so cool. He's magic.
He's magic.
And then it echoes because it's in the mountains.
Exactly.
I love that. So another hiker, they experienced something quite odd. She was solo hiking on Ethan Pond Trail and appeared to be entirely alone, having not run into a single person on her hike, which was odd in and of itself. And it was also eerily quiet. She was like, there were no birds. I couldn't hear anything. Like, just a vacuum of silence in the woods, which is never a good sign.
Sure.
suddenly there was a gust of wind that came out of nowhere and she spotted another hiker. But this hiker, just as soon as they appeared, they were gone with the wind. His image appearing and then going as the wind started to die down.
Do you think the wind carries many spirits and like just occasionally they catch like the shape of whatever energy or environment is there and they form, but they're moving with the wind?
Definitely. It's like in Pocahontas.
It's kind of beautiful. It's like very Pocahontas.
It is really beautiful.
Growing up, cereal was one of the best parts of being a kid. But then as I got older, I was like, oh, wait, cereal has so much sugar in it and it's not actually healthy for me. But that's why I'm so excited that we found and are sponsored by Magic Spoon. They have the amazing flavors you love, but high protein and less sugar.
As a pregnant person who only wants cereal for dinner every night, but I don't want to feel bad about myself for what I'm giving this baby. This has been really, really great because it does have 0 grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, and 4 to 5 grams of net carbs. That's only 140 calories a serving, so I don't have to feel bad about my midnight snack. Mm-hmm. And they have a variety pack of 4 flavors, which are cocoa, fruity, frosted, and peanut butter.
What's your favorite?
God, I like them all. I probably eat the cocoa and peanut butter the most, but sometimes I just really want that frosted.
I'm a peanut butter or a fruity.
Oh, look at you.
And it's high protein. Has 0 grams of sugar. It's keto friendly, gluten free, grain free, and soy free. So go to magicspoon.com/TGOG to grab a variety pack and try it today. And be sure to use our promo code TGOG at checkout to save $5 off your order. And Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund you your money, no questions asked. Remember, start your day off right with a delicious bowl of high protein cereal at magicspoon.com/TGOG. And use the code TGOG to save $5 off. Thank you, Magic Spoon, for sponsoring this episode.
Another hiker, it was a woman who was planning to hike the Kedrum Flume Trail to Mount Wiley, and the weather was a little bit questionable. So she gets to the Mount Wiley house. I think there's a parking lot right there. So she parks, she gets out of her car. The wind is so strong, it almost knocks her over in the parking lot. So she's like, okay, probably not the best idea to solo hike today or hike at all.
Sure.
So she goes to get back in her car with the intention of driving home and coming back the next day. But then as she's sitting there, she's suddenly overcome by this feeling that she needs to go to the trailhead. So she gets back out of her car again and she walks over to the trailhead at the base of the parking lot. And the next thing she knows, she's summiting the mountain. She is basically right at the top. And she's like, I don't know if I was just super deep in thought. I'm not really sure what happened. I don't know how much time passed, but I literally was at the bottom. And then I was just like deeply thinking. And all of a sudden I was at the top and I could see the trees opening up to the summit.
Aliens?
Then the woman, she's like, okay, gets to the top, walks the rest of the way, probably takes some pictures or whatever, is a little bit confused, but she's like, well, now
take some pictures.
Made it. But now she's like, okay, well, I need to descend the mountain. And it's still really windy and it's a bit icy. She did have spikes with her. And so she was using those to kind of like get steady footing, especially when she got to the ladder portion of the hike, those steps, the ladder slash steps. So she is very slowly and precisely and cautiously going down the ladder. And as she moves, she just takes her time with each of the rings. Suddenly, she feels this wind gather around her neck and waist. And it feels like pressure is being applied, almost as if someone, like the wind is hugging her. It feels like someone is wrapping themselves around her. Her hands and feet are then, she's like pulled back and her hands and feet are no longer on the ladder. She's floating in the air and then boom, she's on the ground on her back. But she was like, I didn't feel like I was injured. It didn't feel like I was dropped from a far distance. It literally felt like I was being pulled down and carried down and then like kind of dropped just before the ground.
Was she being protected by something?
That's literally the question. It was like, why did the wind kind of like tell her to turn? Like, is there multiple things at play here? Because the wind told her to turn around, but then all of a sudden she got this weird feeling to go to the trailhead and then found herself at the summit. But then the wind removed her again. So is the wind and something else battling each other? What's your idea?
What if she was momentarily possessed or taken over by the spirit of one of the Wiley kids or one of the Wileys? And in that like takeover, maybe it was like a residual thing that it was like, we need to get up to the top of the mountain. Like that was reliving the night of their death.
Yeah.
And then the being like taken down, is that like the reenactment and the residual of being taken by the debris? Like, was it all a residual haunting?
Yeah. I don't know. To me, I feel like there's some sort of spirit that was like trying to protect her, trying to turn her back, trying to safely get her down the ladder.
But protect her after taking her up to the top of the mountain when
but it was what if not- there was something else that was taking her up to the top of the mountain?
It's weird. It's so weird.
I know. Well, perhaps we don't want to believe that any of the Wiley family are there spooking hikers, or if they are, they don't have any ill intent towards anyone. But we do know for certain, well, I say for certain, that Samuel Wiley was there at least for a little bit of time because his own family believed that their spirits remained for a short period of time after their deaths. Samuel's brother had a very vivid dream not long after the tragedy where Sam appeared to him and he was watching the Saco River rise really quickly and was really fearful that their home would be swept away. And so he was gathering his family to lead them to higher ground, or he was trying to. That was his intention. So Samuel Wiley's brother believes that this was a message from Sam from beyond the grave, trying to show him what happened to them.
What happened?
And why to try to help, you know, probably bring some peace and closure to the family who was likely confused as to what happened and where they were trying to go. What happened that day was a horrible tragedy, one that has stuck with people for centuries. Nathaniel Hawthorne even wrote a short story about the tragedy called The Ambitious Guest. Artists have painted the home, the destructive rainstorm, and modern-day museums showcase artifacts and information from the home and about the Wiley family. While what happened is horrific and sad, the story of the Wiley family has permanently affected this area, both in its history and in its hauntings. Though there are quite a lot of ghost stories here, many that I have not talked about today. And what I didn't say earlier was that this is smack dab in the middle of the Appalachian Mountains, a part of the Appalachian Trail. So perhaps I'll revisit some of the other spookier stories right in this area along this trail another day.
Which we absolutely will because there are so many.
Oh yeah, I already wrote it down. It's happening, but not for, I'll take a long break. I'll take many months so I'm not just New Hampshire, New Hampshire, New Hampshire all over people.
My heart aches and breaks for this family. And
yeah,
I really do hope that they are not stuck here and that they're not like trapped or confused. And if they are haunting, it is by choice. It is because they love the area and not because they are lost and confused.
Same. I know.
I do need to show everyone. Can you see the cat hair?
Not really, but maybe I'm sure people will be able to on the video. The connection is always much worse than, oh wait, I can see it. Yeah. From Leia cuddling on you.
Leia was cuddling on me and I am covered in her hair.
Sweet little baby.
I also like to imagine the family dog having, after the tragedy, spending some time out there and still seeing and being able to visit his family.
Yeah, I know. Maybe he's a little ghost dog guide on the trail too, making sure everybody gets from point A to point B safely.
And has decided to stay with the family. I have two short stories.
Okay.
So this is from our listener, Ashley, and it's called The Cemetery Next Door. And clearly, I didn't even know that I would say how much I wanted to bring back Victorian cemeteries, but apparently it was on my mind. It's been on my mind. Hi, ladies. I have been listening to your podcast while working remotely and love what you do. I grew up next to a cemetery in an old town in New Hampshire. My parents and I have had paranormal experiences since I began walking and talking as a little girl. And I still experience things in my own house today, but this is my favorite story. When I was 4 years old, I told my mother that I saw a lady floating down the hallway in a flowy white dress. Soon after, my mother woke in the middle of the night and felt the urge to check on me. As she peeked into my room, she saw a woman in a white dress floating towards my bed. How's the spider doing?
It still hasn't come back. It disappeared a while ago, but I keep checking.
As the woman approached me, she floated up and above me and then disappeared through the wall. At the same time, I stirred and started talking in my sleep. She described the woman as middle-aged with a short blonde bob hairstyle. Fast forward to January of 2020. My husband and I were on a cruise. We sailed through horrible weather one night, and the seas were scarily rough and the wind was so strong. We were told to stay inside and off of the outer deck. The entire boat was making these awful creaking sounds with every gigantic wave, and the wind howled all night long. I was truly scared to death. After a night of no sleep, we ventured out of our cabin early the next morning, and we were so happy to see sunshine and calm seas. We went out to the usually packed upper deck, and there wasn't a soul in sight. It was eerily quiet, but also peaceful. We headed across the opposite side of the deck, and I was leading the way with my husband behind me. I turned to look towards him to say something, and as I finished my sentence, I turned my head to look ahead again. From the corner of my eye, I saw a woman standing right next to me. She had her back towards me as if she was looking out towards the ocean. And I thought I was going to bump into her, so I instinctively say, "Excuse me." But I realized there was no one there. I was startled and frantically looked around the deck for this woman, but no one else was around except for my husband and I. The icing on the cake? This woman had a blonde bob hairstyle, was wearing a loose white short sleeve dress with tiny dark blue flowers all over it. So is this my guardian angel? Perhaps she was keeping us safe through that crazy storm the night before. I have no idea who she is, but I'm comforted thinking that she's watching over me. Ashley.
Oh my gosh, this is incredible. And to get so close that you think you're going to bump into someone and be like, "Excuse me," and then them, boom, not be like, that's impossible. It's impossible to just be like, "Oh, maybe they moved more quickly than I could have imagined." Like, no, 100% yeah. That's a spirit of some kind. And for her to appear in such a beautiful way too, with like her flowing white dress with the little flowers, like it just seems so cute.
I'm curious what she was saying in her sleep. Like, were they having a conversation? Because it sounds like young Ashley communicated with this spirit.
It definitely does. Ooh, so cool.
Okay, this next one is also from a listener and takes place in New Hampshire. This is from Shauna, and it's called "The Ghost from Work Followed Me Home." I have always been pretty sensitive to spirits, and when I was a child, I had a ghostly friend that was an old man whom my mother is convinced was one of her uncles who had died before I was even born. But I'm writing tonight about the place I work. I work at a resort in New Hampshire in the reservations office. Our office used to be a home, but the resort bought it to make it so that the check-in office could be a standalone building, and the reservations office was placed above that. Within this home, a man named Francis lived here with his wife back in the early 1970s. Very sadly, in 1977, at the age of 38, Francis was murdered, and his murder was never solved. You can actually look up the unsolved murder online. There's a lot of information about it.
Okay.
Anyway, I found out about him when I mentioned to my boss that it sounded like someone had been in her office that night. And so she told me about the story of Frank and told me that he likes to play with the sink, mess around with the phones, and just be a bother. She also had a word of warning and said, "Don't be rude to him because he can and will push you down the stairs. He had tried to do it to her before."
Frank, what the hell? He seems so cool and chill, and now he's like throwing people down the stairs.
I feel like it's like the way you speak to him, but it sounds like if you tell him to like not bother you, he'll be like, "Okay, well, then I'm going to push you down the stairs. This is my house."
My man, I'm sorry what happened to you happened, but you got to work on your emotional regulation.
Seriously.
It's not cool.
Shauna says, "I took this to heart. So every morning that I was in the office, I would say good morning to him. And every night that I left last, I would say good night. Fast forward 3 years later, and suddenly I'm at home hearing footsteps and heavy breathing, and no one was around. So I was like, is it Frank? These noises continued, and one night I say, 'Frank, hush, I'm sleeping.' And it went silent. No more moving around, no more heavy breathing. I brush it off. He's pretty harmless, and I've always been nice to him, but it keeps happening. Finally, one night I tell him, 'Frank, you can't come home with me. You live there, and I live here.' Again, the noises stop and things settle down. But then they always start up again. Tonight was the final straw. As I'm feeding my cat, I saw a shadow go into the bathroom. At first, I panicked. Did someone follow me home into my apartment? No, surely not. I'm on the third floor. So with the cat fed, I go to the bathroom, and I see that the door is now shut, which I never shut that door because my cat's litter box is in there, so I leave it open. Needless to say, my mother is coming to Sage ASAP. I don't think he's dangerous, but in the off chance it's not Frank and I found some other friend along the way, I'm definitely cleansing to try to get rid of it."
That's what I was going to say. I feel like if you keep telling Frank not to come home with you and that he's not welcome there, it does feel like Frank would be a little bit more reactive to being told no instead of just like calming down and then the activity picking up again. So I'm kind of thinking it is something else.
Yeah. And also I'm curious if, because like it sounds like Frank is very possessive of his house, especially if like someone tells him off, he like pushes them down the stairs. Like, yeah. I don't know that
he's not trying to find a new home.
Trying to leave.
Right.
Yeah.
So interesting. Okay, but this is a resort, so we could totally go there.
We could. Let's go visit Frank.
I'm down.
Okay, it's in New Hampshire too, so we can. It's not far from you. We can drive.
Hell yeah. It won't be far from you either when you move to Marblehead. Back on it again. Bing, bang.
Walla, walla, New Hampshire. Bang, bang. I love New Hampshire. I've only explored a little bit of it, but what I've seen, I love.
Yeah, I took you to Portsmouth and... Oh, no, that was Maine. Never mind.
But we drove through.
You've been on the seacoast.
Yeah, I have. It was nice. If you've been to New Hampshire or if you're haunted in general, please email us your ghostly and paranormal and supernatural encounters to twogirlsoneghostpodcast@gmail.com. If you would like to see the image of the spider that is physically haunting Corinne, go check out our YouTube. And it's not terrifying, but we're warning you that it's in here.
You can also get all episodes of our podcast ad-free and 1 week early. That's the audio and video format on Patreon. We have one tier. It's $5 a month to be our most haunted friend. And not only will you get that, but you get quarterly book clubs, campfire service every Tuesday night, a sticker, so many good things. And shout out to Jamie, who produces our podcast, edits all of our audio and video. Thank you, Jamie Ryan.
And thank you to all of you. We love you. Thank you for coming back. And if you ever sent nudes as a young lass and got caught by your parents, tell us.
Oh, gosh. This is a tricky tribute. Keep it to yourself, actually.
Don't share the picture. Just tell us about the experience.
It's the line I don't want to be on.
I know I'm not alone. People have been caught by their parents before.
Oh, 100%. That's childhood, baby. That's growing up and puberty. If you have ghost stories, email us. Keep coming back every single week, please, hopefully.
We love you.
And we will see you on the other side.